Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Free Speech and Election Law Practice Group, was recorded on Monday, January 12, 2015, during a live Courthouse Steps telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Welcome to a special Courthouse Steps edition of the Practice Group's telephone conference call. Today, we're going to be discussing the oral argument earlier today in the case Reed versus Town of Gilbert. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. Please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Also, as always, we're recording the call for use as a podcast in the future. We have with us today a return guest, Hans A. von Spakovsky. Sorry for botching your name, Hans. He is a manager in the Election Law Reform Initiative and a senior legal fellow in the Edwin Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. As I mentioned, he's a return guest. He attended oral argument this morning. We're very pleased to have you with us today, Mr. von Spakovsky. And he's going to give us some opening remarks of about 10 minutes. After that, as always, we'll be turning to our audience for questions, so please have those questions in mind when we get to that point in the program. With that, Hans, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Dean, and welcome to everyone who's listening to this Federalist Society podcast. This case, Reed versus Town of Gilbert, Arizona, was the first case up for argument this morning, and it was actually very interesting getting to the court because of various delays at the federal government and schools opening because of ice and freezing rain in the Washington area. But all the members of the court managed to get there, as did the lawyers. This is a case that actually was first filed in 2007, so it's been going on now for a number of years. The plaintiff, Reed, is Pastor Clyde Reed, who's the head of the Good News Community Church in Gilbert, Arizona. And the case is a First Amendment challenge over a very strict and, frankly, complex sign ordinance that the city of Gilbert, Arizona has in place. The Good News Community Church does not have a permanent structure. So they move around the town of Gilbert, holding services on Sundays, and they hold it at different places as they can get them, for example, in elementary schools. In order to be able to get people to their church, they have to put up temporary signs that tell people where the church services are going to be on Sunday. The town of Gilbert, as I said, has a very complex set of rules governing different kinds of signs, and it's actually kind of interesting because the rules are so complex that the plaintiffs in this case actually in the brief put something that you don't often see in Supreme Court briefs, which is they put in photographs, actual photographs, for example, of the kind of signs that they try to use to direct people to their church, and they also had to put in graphs to try to explain the different rules that apply to signs. And to give an example of the issues that are going on here is the city has different rules, for example, for what they call political signs. They have another rule for what they call ideological signs. They have another rule for event signs, another rule for real estate signs, and another rule for homeowners association signs. And the complaint that the church has is that under the rules that apply to the church for their Sunday services, they're only allowed to put their direction sign up 12 hours before church services, which means, in essence, that if they're going to have a morning service on Sunday, their sign is only going to go up late Saturday night when it's already dark and people will have a hard time seeing the sign, and they have to take it down within 1 hour. On the other hand, real estate signs, for example, for a open house on a Sunday, which again is a temporary direction sign, kind of very similar to what the church has, those can get put up 16 hours before an event and don't have to be taken down until 36 hours after. If a homeowners association is having an event, their temporary sign can be up for actually 30 days prior to the event, and then they have 2 days to take it down. Political signs have the longest period of time. They're up for almost, they can be up for almost 5 months prior to election. There's something like, I believe, 15 days, so a little more than 2 weeks, for the candidates to get those signs down after the election. And not only are the times, time and manner restrictions different, but homeowner signs, for example, can be up to 80 square feet. Political signs can be up to 32 square feet. An ideological sign can be up to 20 square feet. Yet the church's invitational scene, a sign can't be larger than 6 square feet, much smaller, making it much harder to see. In addition, political signs have the right to be placed in the public right of way, something the church, again, is not allowed to do. So the church's main argument under the First Amendment is, you know, they're not asking for any special privileges, any special rules for them that would give them a bigger advantage over others, but they are asking for basically the same kind of rules to be applied to them as are applied to other categories of signs. It's interesting that one of the issues that came up in the case that caused the U.S. government, the Solicitor General's office, to file an amicus brief in the case is what is the level of review that should be used by the Supreme Court in taking a look at this ordinance and deciding whether or not it violates the First Amendment. The church is arguing that strict scrutiny should be applied. That's the highest level of review that the court can apply. And for a law to survive strict scrutiny, it has to be the least restrictive means of achieving a compelling state interest. The town of Gilbert believes that intermediate scrutiny, which is a lesser standard review, should be applied. Intermediate scrutiny will uphold a law as long as it advances important governmental interests unrelated to the suppression of free speech and doesn't burden substantially more speech than necessary to further those interests. The Solicitor General filed an amicus brief arguing that intermediate scrutiny should apply. But they disagreed with the town of Gilbert and said that under the intermediate scrutiny level, the town ordinance fails and it does not comply with the First Amendment. It was a very interesting argument this morning. One thing that I noticed was that there didn't seem to be as much interruptions as you often see with some of the justices interrupting each other and interrupting the questions and interrupting the answer that the lawyer attempting to give the answer is making. In fact, they were very inquisitive in their inquiries as to how this ordinance works and also, of course, what level of scrutiny should be applied. One of the questions that Justice Scalia asked was, if the concern of the city was public safety and to avoid clutter, and those were the arguments that the city put out to justify its ordinance. One of the questions that Justice Scalia asked is, well, then why is there no limit on political signs if your concern is clutter? Because there's no limit on the number of political signs that can be put up in comparison to, for example, the directional signs of the church. And the answer of the town was that, well, the ordinance did that because they were complying with a state law requirement with regard to political signs. Justice Scalia raised a laugh in the courtroom when he then said, "So your answer is that the state made us do it." There were also questions by Justice Kagan and Justice Breyer that indicated that those two justices, who you know tend to be more liberal in their outlook, were also skeptical about this town ordinance, Justice Kagan also focused on the very generous provisions for what are called ideological signs, and said that that does seem to be a content-based discrimination, and that that would potentially fail whether the standard review is strict scrutiny or intermediate scrutiny. Justice Breyer at one point asked for, he posed a specific hypothetical about a particular sign that the church could put up, and in answer to the town of Gilbert saying basically that, yeah, that would violate the town ordinance, Justice Breyer said that it sounded like the town was being a bit unreasonable. You know, none of these questions, of course, predict the outcome, but it seemed pretty clear that the court was skeptical of, frankly, the differentiation that the town was making between different kinds of signs and the reasons that they were giving for doing that. The town of Gilbert did make the argument that if the court struck down their ordinance, it would lead to chaos and to sign ordinances being struck down all over America. Their lawyer said that the only thing that that kind of a ruling would have the opposite effect, because it would mean that towns would be placed in this position of, frankly, wanting to strictly ban and restrict all kinds of signs to avoid litigation, and so things would actually get worse. The church, which is represented in this case by the Alliance Defending Freedom, actually pointed to an amicus brief that had been filed in the case by, I think it was the National League of Cities, which made the point that there are many, many ordinances on signs all across the country that have withstood litigation and challenges, and are actually examples of what Gilbert could have done, which would have been acceptable and would not have violated the First Amendment. In fact, the counsel for the church pointed to the District of Columbia, where the Supreme Court is located, for its sign ordinance, which does not make these kind of distinctions, for example, with temporary signs between ideological, political, and other signs, but treats them the same. The government, even though they were not a party in the case, did get 10 minutes to argue on the review standard, but otherwise the case was argued by, of course, the lawyers for both sides, and we have no idea when they will issue the decision, but the only thing we know for sure is it will come out before the end of the term in June. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, Dean.
All right. Thank you so much. We certainly appreciate those comments. In a moment, we'll all hear an announcement that will say the floor mode is on. After you hear that announcement, if you have a question for our expert, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. So once again, if you have a question for our expert today, you need to push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Before we go to our first caller, let me make a quick programming announcement. Our next scheduled Teleforum conference call is Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be speaking then with attorney Brian Tremont and FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai about net neutrality, even as the commission seems to be moving in the direction of regulating the Internet. Today, of course, we're talking to Hans von Spakovsky about today's oral argument in Reed versus Town of Gilbert. Our lines are open. We don't have any callers on the line at the moment. If you'd like to ask a question, you can be the first by pushing star and then pound on your telephone. And while we wait, Hans, let me ask you if you want to say any more about confusion or the difference between and distinction between viewpoint neutrality versus content neutrality, and how that plays in this case.
Well, in fact, that's a key issue in the case, because I think the justices at some point, at least one of them, was I think discussing the idea that the town is confused between viewpoint discrimination and content discrimination, and the rules basically are that you know, different levels of scrutiny apply depending on whether a law is content-based or content-neutral. And the town kept saying, well, this doesn't discriminate on the basis of viewpoint. And what they meant by that was, you know, they don't discriminate, for example, in an ideological sign, what they categorize as an ideological sign, as to whether someone, for example, wants to put out a sign that's pro-abortion or anti-abortion. But the point that the church made is that, in fact, no, the problem is that your rules are content-based. In other words, the town officials, they're looking at the content of a sign, and they're deciding whether they think it's a political sign, an ideological sign, a homeowner's a sign, or one of the other many categories they have, to then figure out which rule applies as to time, place, manner, and quantity of signs that can be put out. And that in itself means this is not a content-neutral ordinance, and therefore the highest standard of review, strict scrutiny, applies.
Once again, if you have a question, our lines are open. Push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. We've got just one caller question pending at the moment. Now two, and if you'd like to join the queue, push the star button, then the pound button on your phone. Let's take our first question of the day.
It's David Emerson, society member in Berkeley, California. Were the arguments largely on the free speech clause, or was there also a free exercise clause argument being made as well?
You know, that's a very interesting question, Dave, because you would think that it might have been more of the free exercise of religion issue. But no, it really was talking about free speech. Now, that came up because of the fact that the church made the argument that because of the difference in the way the city treats political, ideological, and other signs, the city actually has made a value judgment that political signs and ideological signs of particular kinds are more valuable than other kind of signs, like the signs this church puts out to invite people to come worship and to direct them to where their church is. And they did say, the church did say, that the town is not entitled to make those type of value judgments, that it's not proper for the town to believe that, for example, political speech is more important than a speech about religion, and therefore political signs can be larger, can be in the right of way, can stay up much longer, and you can have a larger quantity of them. And part of their brief, in fact, referred to an older case, Metro Media, which is a 1981 case in which the Supreme Court said that a city can distinguish between the relative value of different categories of commercial speech, but a city can't make the same range of choices in the area of non-commercial speech to evaluate the strength of or distinguish between various communicative interests. And that, I think, is actually a pretty strong argument that, you know, you can't value political speech over religious speech or the exercise of a religion, so that one part of the First Amendment has a greater value than another part of the First Amendment.
Again, if you'd like to join the queue, push the star button and the pound button on your telephone. We've got two questions pending right now. Let's take another call.
Hi, Hans. It's Ilya Shapiro from Cato. I wasn't able to make it to argument this morning, but it sounds like, I mean, I want to push you to make some sort of prediction or, you know, either in terms of their vote or doctrinally where this is going, because between your description and what I've read on SCOTUS blog, it seems unclear. I mean, at certain points, there seems to be favorable things to both sides, But it's just, you know, as you recited the litany of the different types of regulations for the different types of signs, it just sounds so bizarre. I mean, at the very least, there has to be a high degree of unanimity for some sort of statement that you can't micromanage speech to this level.
Well, Ilya, that's actually a good observation. And if, as you and I both know, you know, one can't make money predicting how the Supreme Court is going to come out if you're a betting person. But I suspect that the court may, in some ways, kind of skip the more substantive issues and basically come down on the side of this law being so complex that it chills speech because no one can quite figure out what category their speech is going to fit into, and because it's so complicated also, you're never even quite sure of what the city may decide because it all depends on the judgment of different city officials. So I suspect, you know, the comment by Justice Breyer that it sounds like the town is being a bit unreasonable, that might actually be the theme of the decision they come out with a lot more wordage applied to it.
Once again, push star and then pound button if you'd like to join the conversation. We've got one caller pending at this point. Let me ask you, before we go to our next question, Hans, another predictive question. Is this a case you think likely to go to the very end of the term before we get a decision, or is it going to have more consensus and therefore not wait to the last day of the term for a decision? Any sense on that?
That's always also tough to predict. I would tend to think we might get this a bit earlier because of the fact that I actually thought there was a bit more unanimity than one normally sees among the justices. They almost all seemed concerned with the complexity and Byzantine nature of this ordinance. So I don't think the issues in this are as complex or as difficult as some of the other cases that we still have coming up in the term. So I tend to believe that we probably will get this sooner than a decision in those other cases.
Interesting. Again, just one question pending. Let's go to our next caller.
Yes, thank you very much. Interesting discussion. My name is Alan Vixler. I'm in New Jersey. So if I understand it correctly, if I lived in this town and I put up a sign on my front yard where it abuts the road, and it said, "Worship God," that's ideological. But if I added instructions to where you could go to worship God at this church, now I have a different set of rules that apply. How could that be other than content-oriented?
Well, in fact, that's exactly the argument that the church was making in the case this morning. I mean, the council for the town tried to qualify that by saying it's not, but I think the justices, frankly, were having a tough time believing that because, as you say, that doesn't seem like common sense.
No, indeed.
Well, I suppose the church could construct a sign that says "Vote early and often." And enjoy our church services this Sunday at this location. I guess
yeah,
some sort
right.
of hybrid sign.
You know, I tell you, well, let me just say something else that I found kind of interesting, because I really didn't hear this argument made in the case, which maybe it's because I'm getting older and I have more trouble reading, you know, these days, particularly things at a distance. Look, part of the argument that the town was making was that this is a safety issue. And if people are reading a sign to get directions to go somewhere, if you have a lot of those signs, it's going to cause potential safety problems. But, political signs normally just have a candidate's name on them. Maybe they'll have the party or they'll say, you know, Tom Smith for Attorney General. There was actually signs like that in the brief. Well, that's a very short, simple message. It's easy to read. Those signs are much larger than the small, much smaller directional signs. Well, if you're giving directions to somebody, that's usually takes more time to read directions than a simple message sign. And so one would think that if safety is a concern, you would want the direction signs to be as large as possible, to, with larger lettering, to make it much easier for people to read as they're driving by in a car. But I didn't really see that argument made in the case today.
Well, it's an interesting point. We just have one question pending. Our lines are open. Push star and then pound on your telephone if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's take yet another call.
Hi, Hans. It's Lisa Garcia, FOIA Resource Center. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I really typed in just to ask you if we should make anything of the Solicitor General's position of intermediate scrutiny. I mean, you know, sometimes they put an amicus trying to reserve an argument for a different case, and I didn't know if I was being too conspiracy theorist oriented in my...
Well, in fact, I think that may have been what was going on here, because if you look at the brief the government filed, what they said was that the town of Gilbert sign ordinance fails intermediate scrutiny, but the Highway Beautification Act would not. The Highway Beautification Act is a federal law that governs, you know, billboards and other things along federal highways. That statute was not an issue in this case at all. But I wonder whether perhaps the U.S. Department of Transportation might have been concerned about the implications of a strict scrutiny analysis being applied to this federal law, the Highway Beautification Act, and so influence the Department of Justice to come in and do that, because fully half of their argument, you know, one half of the argument is saying intermediate scrutiny applies, not strict scrutiny, and the other half of the brief is talking about how the Highway Beautification Act would not fail intermediate scrutiny. So they're arguing about a federal statute that's not even at issue here, which does seem to be perhaps trying to preserve that argument for some future case.
Gotcha. Thank you so much.
Our lines are now open. Let me ask again, if folks have a question, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Well, Hans, I don't see any further questions. We're going to adjourn here early, but before we do that, let me give you a chance to say anything you might want to say in conclusion.
Well, it's a very interesting case. We've had a lot of religious freedom cases that have come up before the courts in recent years, most famously the Hosanna Tabor case, for example, a couple of years ago, in which the Justice Department lost 9-0 in that case. And this is another First Amendment case also, and we've also had quite a few of those. And in fact, we will have another First Amendment case in about a week involving the Florida Bar Association and the rules governing solicitation of donations by judicial candidates. So the second term of the Supreme Court this year is full of very important First Amendment issues.
Well, terrific. Thank you so much, Hans, for attending oral argument, particularly on such a grueling Washington, D.C. weather day. For those of you who are not in the area, you don't appreciate the fact that Hans probably had to undertake heroic measures today to get to the oral argument. So we doubly appreciate you your presentation today. To our audience, again, a reminder that our next scheduled telephone conference call is later this week, Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be talking to FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai and Brian Tremont about net neutrality and all things FCC. That's Wednesday at 1 p.m. But I also advise you to check in with our website and monitor your emails, because it's quite possible we'll add additional telephone conference calls this week. But until that next call, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.